There he is.
What up?
There he is.
What up, boy?
You good?
Good to see you, brother.
Up,
yes, sir.
Okay. How you doing? You good?
I'm cool, bro. You?
Sure. Man, strong, awesome, brother.
Nah, nice to meet you.
Yo, sir, nice to meet you, too, bro.
What you say? You strong, Freddie?
Man, strong as a muff.
And got a big back slap.
I thought it was going to be him.
He gonna cut up.
I was gonna be here.
He always cut up.
What up? What's going on?
Man, appreciate you.
I appreciate y'all having me.
Nah, this is dope.
Been a fan of the show forever.
Been trying to get it together for a while, man. So I'm pumped.
Man, we appreciate it though,
bro. Nah, bro, like all the episodes is fire.
Man, all love, bro.
For real. For real, for real. You learn so much about different people.
Yeah.
That you thought you knew. You know what I mean?
Like
that
personal thing, man. But yeah, you got a laser tape.
Here you go. That's last night's prayer.
Hey, Chairman, when we get to this age, man, the fact that you can still get an edge up is very important, man.
You taking a shot at Fred?
No.
I'm content. I told you already, bro.
Content and comfortable.
I told him that. Yeah. We just had this conversation in the room.
Yeah,
he was getting cut up. He just got a fresh
one. Here's the thing, too, though.
Yeah, he did.
Hey, Freddie T keeps saying he chose it.
God.
This haircut chooses
him.
You.
Yeah, no, I told, but what I tell you in the back room?
Yeah.
Like, I said, my barber, he was probably 60-some fingers like this, decrepit, and he was putting clippers on the head. He f***ed everybody up.
When you
was
young?
That was like $5 haircut.
Everybody
in there. $5 haircut.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Everybody Bill Glaze bald.
Everybody in Bill Glaze bald, Fred.
I ain't saying that. Obviously, it's genetics and hereditary.
Everybody in Bill Glaze bald.
That's no cuz. That's life, bro. Keep that shit moving, man. Let's start the show. He off that. Hold up. Limitless. Take a stomach cap, pinning it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, got me up. On the mission, got me up. Knowing me, I got the key. On the vision, I can trust. Trust. Limitless. Take a stomach cap, pinning it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, got me up. On the mission, got me up. Knowing me, I got the key. Welcome to The Pivot.
Appreciate it.
Jamal Crawford. I mean, you don't really need an introduction,
no,
but I do
that.
Like to introduce, obviously, Jay Crossover. You're the oldest man to ever score 50 points in the NBA game. He has the most four-point plays by a lot. I want to ask you how you learned to get fouled shooting three-pointers. And three-time sixth man of the year. This is Freddie T. This is Chan. I'm RC, man. Thank you so much for joining us, bro. It means a lot to us.
Honored to be here, man. Y'all do so much for the culture. Like, it's so dope to see how we really represent, and it's authentic. That's why even the walk-in, I'm like, yeah, that's dope, pal. We don't see him until it's time. Like, right. It's official.
Yeah, man, appreciate
sure.
that.
Honored to be here.
It's cool to start here. You know, we've moved around so much. We feel like, okay, what story do we want to tell?
Right.
And the people we sit down with are so complex. I didn't know you were as complex as you are, and your life and journey was so much of a roller coaster until I really started studying. You know, your sister went to your mom. Your sister Lori went to your mom and said she had babies at 12 and at 13, and then she's pregnant with you, and your sister said, I take care of him.
Yeah.
I'll be with him. He could sleep in my room. Obviously, you aren't there for that. How much of those conversations have they shared with you to let us know this is the only way we got Aaron Jamal Crawford, because he wouldn't be here without that?
As I got older, you know what I mean? Like, as I got older in my journey, they would say little things and little things like, yeah, you weren't supposed to be here. I'm like, well, what do you mean I wasn't supposed to be here? Because to your point, my mom had my older sister Lisa at 13, at 12, and then she had my sister Lori at 13. And then from there, it was a gap. So my mom still went to college on time, still graduated college, became a teacher. So the mayor now in Seattle, Mayor Bruce Harrell, my mom taught him in high school. You know what I'm saying? So she was like, she's one of the most brilliant people I've ever met, by far. Like, she's brilliant. I talked to her just to get game, she'll say something. I'm like, where'd you get that from? Like, there's left field. So she was a break, and then she got pregnant with me at, I believe, 25. And she was like, no, I'm done with babies. Like, I had it, I did what I needed to do, and then here I am. And so they tell me more and more as I got older, but it was a trip to find that out, for sure.
Why Jamal, not Aaron?
Do I look like an Aaron to you? I got too much swag for Aaron.
Hey, my real first name is Randolph.
Oh, you definitely ain't Randolph. You definitely ain't Randolph or Mortimer. You ain't Randolph.
Yeah, I said, man, this, and people like, why don't you go with Randolph? I said, because that shit's ugly.
It's ugly.
Like, yeah.
Nah, it's weird. All the dudes in my family, my cousin Quincy, his name is James. They go by Quincy. My nephew, Ant, his name is Leonard. He goes by Anthony. So all the dudes in my family, for whatever reason, go by the middle name, which is crazy. So I don't know, but it worked out. Jamal's my stage name.
He's an entertainer. He's a performer.
Bro, yeah, I'm a performer. That's my stage name.
Yeah, you know, when you are growing up and you're sort of back and forth between L.A.
and Seattle,
you know, we talk about your mom being brilliant. You didn't necessarily love school, at least early, which I think a lot of us can relate to when you fall in love with that basketball or that football, and that's all you want to do. Talk to me a little bit about meeting another future NBA superstar in a barbershop and having a conversation that might have inspired you a little bit to tap into school so you could become what you became on the court.
Because, you know, when we're young, we think our talent's gonna take us out of the situation. No matter if the school, no matter if it's, you know, adults, whatever it is, my talent's gonna take me through everything. So I'm like, I'm gonna be so good in basketball, it's not gonna matter. And as fate would have it, I made varsity as a freshman in high school, and then I realized you needed grades. And I realized you couldn't just turn on your senior year, like these grades follow you, your transcripts follow you. And so I used to ditch class all the time. One thing I learned about myself is I love talking to older black men. I always have, ever since. I love getting game from them. I love being in the neighborhood. And so I would always go to barbershops. And one day, there's this guy by the name of Paul Pierce, and he's a McDonald's All-American. He's a senior, I'm a freshman. And he's sitting in the chair, and the thing about me, if you ask anybody, I study the game so much. So I knew everybody. But I had never seen him in person. So I'm like, this is the Paul Pierce everybody keeps, I said it out loud, this is the Paul Pierce everybody keeps talking about. He in the chair, he looked at me. And you know, now as we know, this Paul Pierce, who has no filter, looked at me and said, man, who the hell are you? Ain't you supposed to be in class somewhere? And it hit me. I'm like, oh, like I really have to get my schoolwork done so I can have a chance to be like this dude. And so that moment kind of changed everything as far as just locking in with class. I was locked in with the game, but I had to be locked in with school too. But Paul Pierce, man, and as fate would have it, we talked about that because we became teammates with the Clippers. And when that happened, it was just, you know, full circle moment. Like, dang, did we ever think we'd be here together? It's just crazy how life works.
And going back even further, back to your AAU days, your childhood days, I saw an interview where you said when you weren't necessarily that good, you know, you were always on the B team. You had to play on the B courts. Talk about the roads you had to take in order to get there. We did a show with LaDainian Tomlinson. Mm-hmm. And I told these guys, then they eventually laughed at me. I told them I would walk down the sidewalk and dodge gumdrops and cracks in the sidewalk. That was my little stupid thing that kind of turned into my natural ability. And it helped kind of translate to what I did on the field. You said you chew gum and dribbled the ball at the same time. That's everything became natural. What thing allowed you to become who you are? Like, what foolish, stupid, kiddie thing?
So the first part was I always thought I was pretty good in the city. And then this thing called AAU jumped on the scene, right? There's only two teams. I made the top team, but in Rotary Hoop, shout out to them. That's who I coach for now. I coach my son. And they've always kept 10 people. And I was the 10th person on the team. Literally, I was the 10th person on the team. Not talent-wise, but just the intensity of AAU, travel ball. I'm like, oh, this is real. And my mom, kudos to her and my dad, they always let me make my own decisions when it came to sport. They wasn't the parent that was gonna complain or, you know, my son needs to be playing. It was none of that. They're like, okay, you wanna be better? Go get better. Mm-hmm. I'm like, all right. So I stopped playing AAU. And I just worked on my game. I took a ball with me everywhere I went. I had some candy in one hand, sunflower seeds or something. And I had a basketball. And so I was the kid who had a ball and somebody be walking towards me, somebody going into work, business person. I'm dribbling, I do a move. They look at, they walk past like, what's he doing? This kid's crazy, what's he doing? So now looking back, that's where my footwork came from. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, oh, okay. Now I just became one with the ball. I used to sleep with my ball. So I've never done a cone drill in my life, never. I've never done it, because to me, my thinking was that cone's not a 6'6". Two guard who can move and be athletic. So I'm like, let me just play and figure it out. And so I just kept the ball with me. And so when I'm dribbling, it's almost like when you're walking. You're not thinking left foot, right foot. You're just walking.
Right.
I can lose the ball and go into a whole nother move where you thought you had it because I became one with the ball. It's like it's just part of me. But that was my dumb, silly thing. I went to the movies, the ball's in the seat. It's my carry-on on the flight.
More like Wilson.
Bro, and that's
the way.
It went all the way to the pros. My first career high was 33 points, 8 assists. It was against Philly in 2003. You can look it up. I'm laying up asleep with the ball on the right. The ball's on the right side of the bed. I'm on the left side that night. Like, so it just became, it was my safety haven. Cause I was always, my mom and dad were never together. So I was always with one or with the other, and that ball looking back kept me safe.
Wow, that's crazy.
And bro, I got it. It's funny because I heard that story already. I read that story already. And I would say, as we research, bro, it's a lot of, like, the stories that I read, that shit's like a movie.
Bro, it is a movie. I'm gonna tell y'all, I ain't told nobody. So I gotta give y'all something.
Appreciate it.
I'm working on something where in the next year or so, I'm trying to get tape from when I was 8 years old all the way to present day of unreleased footage of me playing. I don't mean the stuff you know and see, stuff on playgrounds, stuff in men's league, stuff from all the way through my journey, and release it and call it The Lost Crosses.
That's dope.
Bro, yeah. But the story I read, which just I need some clarity on, is that you wanted to run away, but you buried a...
That was genius, wasn't it?
That was not genius.
It was genius.
You buried a bag in the backyard, but dug it up every day to fold your clothes from that.
Did you know the bag was there?
I didn't know the bag was there, yeah,
my dad and grandma didn't know it was there.
It's a big-ass hole in the yard.
It was.
But
I was the one that had to water the grass, so I knew where the hose was and everything.
So you wanted to run away and bury the bag in the backyard, dug it up every day, and put more clothes in it.
So let me give you some backstory to that. So I'm in Seattle at the time. I'm 13 years old. I'm coming in the house. So the area that DeJounte Murray talks about, we all from the same area. So I'm coming in the house at 12 at night at 12 years old. I basically was kind of raising myself in that regard. So when my dad and grandma came to Seattle to get me, like, no, you need a father figure at 13 years old, I didn't want to go. But they not kidnapped me, but they made me go to L.A. So I'm there for 3 years, and now we're that story. My sister sends me a ticket. It wasn't like paperless tickets at the time. Like, I'm already ditching school, so I'm checking the mail, making sure I get the ticket first, right? I got the tickets a month out. We all got clothes in our closet that ain't nobody wearing, you know, the ones. My grandma and them didn't know that, so I'm keeping them in front. The stuff I thought was sweet and was nice, I'm putting that in the burgundy bag in the back. Every day when I pick up the dog food, there's one. All right, so it doesn't look like it's obvious. Yeah. I was pretty smart at a young age, right? So I'm putting it in the back every day. And finally, the day came for me to leave, a month later. And I'll never forget, I got a ride from one of my other friends who was dip in school as well. And I got to the airport, and this gentleman I saw said, "Where are you going, Seattle?" And it scared the hell out of me. I'm like, how are they watching me? Like, how do they know? But at that point, I was through security, I was gone. And I never looked back, because I knew the stuff I learned about grades, the stuff I knew about my game, the stuff I knew, I was gonna take that with me when I went back to Seattle. I matured, I learned how to set a table. I went to church every Sunday. Mm-hmm. Like, all the foundation I needed for life, I learned in LA from 13 to 16 between my grandma and my dad. But I was gonna keep that with me. I'm sure they thought like, oh, it's gonna be the same thing. Mm-hmm. But I knew I'm taking this and I'm going where I need to go.
So you start to become Jamal Crawford and you're getting accolades, you start, win state championships, all of these things, and now you're set up. I think you committed to Fresno State initially, and now you're set up, and you know, I had children young, right? I had my first at 19. My parents had me, my mom was 19. Wow. And the one instruction I always got was don't do what I did in those terms.
Be better than me. Yeah.
Right, be better than me. And so I remember, man, it was Christmas break, bro. I had just found out, I got a page, a 911, I was at a step show.
911 page, yeah, we know what that is.
And I ain't talked to you in 6 months, so I was like.
You got a page?
Yeah, I'm old. So I started doing the math, I was like, okay, called. Go home, have the conversation. Now I have to tell my mother. You had to have that same conversation of, you now have a baby on the way and you're a big time high school basketball player, but you're still in high school. Your mama had babies at 12 and 13. What was that conversation like with her and also with your sister to tell them that that's where you were?
That's a great question. You know what? It wasn't my side of the family that was like judgmental or upset. Because they, like we said, they're used to it, right? So they were like, oh, they were happy. Now, Amber's side was like, what are you guys doing? You guys are kids, right? But for me personally, I'm like, the things you said in basketball, I'm like, I gotta get a job. So Climate Pledge Arena, as we know it now in Seattle, used to be Key Arena. I went and got a job at Key Arena.
GP, Sean,
Deadlift, everybody, right? The first weekend, I worked 27 hours because I'm like, I'm trying to work as many hours as I can to get some money for my youngin', right, and his mom. I worked 14 hours on Saturday. I worked 13 hours on Sunday. I remember falling asleep on the job, and I had to go to school Monday. And it was the Sonics had played, so it was a late game. I was the kid who brought stuff up from the basement. So I bring the cotton candy, the peanuts, all up to the concession stand. When I'm there, I'm making that 10-minute trip a 30-minute trip. Because now when I'm there, I'm looking at the court and I'm dreaming. I see GP out there. I see the fans going crazy. I see Sean Kim dunking. And I'm like, damn. And I was so close, but I was so far away. You know what I mean? If that makes sense. Like, I can reach out and touch it, but I have so many layers and boxes I have to check before I get there. But it motivated me even more. And that was my first actual real job. It wasn't the NBA. It was that. I worked in Key Arena.
Did the condom break, or you were just wishing?
See, here you go. I knew it was you.
Was you just wishing, or did this, you know?
I didn't know what I was doing. But yeah. He's a blessing. Eric is a blessing. Like, to see him grow up and go to college and play hoop and chase his dreams in clothing, and it's a blessing. It made me grow up, though.
It's cool to see you out there with him.
He think he can beat me.
Listen, I tell him right now he can't beat you.
Nah, he can't beat me.
Yeah, nah, he's special.
Did the condom break. I was waiting on Jared.
you know it was coming.
I had to ask, like, you know.
We know how babies are made.
I was doing the action of making babies since I was, 13?
You said what happened?
I've been practicing at 13.
Oh, you said practicing making babies.
Yeah, I ain't making babies at 13.
I was making babies since 13.
OG. Yeah. I can't even get to the back door. All right. I stay in the foyer.
Jay, man. This dude, he can't help himself every time. Hey, it's even worse than that off camera. But no, you spoke about the basketball IQ that you have and being a student of the game. What players inspired you to even pick up the basketball?
First, I remember it was like Dr. J. And I remember my mom, the best gift I ever got was a Dr. J hoop. And it was like the little hoop. It had his face on the backboard and it had the yellow ball. I'd take it outside, I'd move it around. And that's when, it wasn't called Jellies then. It's Filet now. It was called Dipsy Dudes. We was doing Dipsy Dude layups on the backboard. And so that was like the first guy. Then it was like Magic, Jordan, Bird. I stole from everybody though. Like I truly can look back like, dang, I stole from everybody. Isaiah Thomas was the first person I saw hit on the ball and it was like mesmerizing. He's the first person I saw like sit down in a chair and go behind his back. Mm-hmm. People used to go behind back like the long way, right? Mm-hmm. So he was that. And then when I saw Jordan, that was it. I had never seen anything move like him. Like just, his whole glow was different. I could feel it through the TV. Like he was jumping over, even his commercials was colder than everybody else. Like he was, bro, he had posters where he's jumping and everybody's like just watching. Like everything about him was so different. So when I saw him, it was just like over with. And then as I grew to like 13, 14, I'm in LA. I remember sneaking in the Lakers game. And when that happened, we got there early and Michael Adams was like doing a shoot around. Mm-hmm. And I loved the game so much that the music that was playing over the house speakers, I thought that's what pros listen to. So I'm like, I'm going home to play that because that's what they're doing. I'm watching every single detail about what they're doing. And now knowing they just playing music, vibing out, you know, shooting or whatever, but it's just, I studied every facet of the game. I collected cards so I could tell you about everybody, but I stole from everybody. Like Penny, Iverson, Nick Van Axel, Rod Strickland, Mahmoud. Like I stole from everybody. And what used to kill me is when I finally got to a point where I thought I was gonna make it, and I used to ask my friend, who I play like? You know, you wanna go to, all you guys had a favorite, we all try to emulate that. Man, you got a little bit of Penny and a little bit of Iverson. I'm like, but it wasn't one person. I used to be frustrated. I'm like, well, how am I gonna make it if I don't play like nobody at the top level? Yeah. Looking back, I'm glad I don't play like nobody else.
Right, you named some amazing point guards, right? And in that story, who has the best handles in the history of the NBA? And this is my very short list.
Yeah, let me hear your list.
Kyrie.
Yes.
And Jamal Crawford.
Oh, that's very short.
Yeah.
God, listen, whisper.
Hey, you ain't gonna throw AI in there?
I know what I'm doing.
Oh, okay.
Well, who's yours since you're doing that?
I was just saying, AI can do it. I'm an ISO guy.
I love AI.
So who you got?
I'm an ISO guy. Bro, I love you.
I appreciate
Lou. Lou Will had the yam yam. Joe ISO Joe got the yam yam. Like just isolation.
You're from Atlanta, right? And so like you have a very Atlanta strip club sort of point of view on basketball.
I done parted with them too.
But like but when you talk about it, AI is in every single AI conversation about handles to me. I think part of what he started with the crossover that hung here was different, right? What cats on the sideline talking about he carrying.
Right.
Right, I think that was different. But you go back to Isaiah Thomas, when you think Isaiah Thomas and you go back to like some of those Lakers and Boston matchups, he was the first cat I ever seen that kept it low to the ground. You see Kyrie doing. Now, my daddy used to chase me around the house singing Bad Boys too, and I hated it because I was a Jordan fan. But Isaiah was different. Obviously, anytime you speak about handles, you got to put Kyrie in there. Yeah. I think Steph handles are underrated because he can shoot so well. Yeah. And then I think Jamal, the thing that was different about him is we really never saw it at like 6'5", 6'6", like that. Oh. I think that's what makes his different, and it was quick, right? When you look at Kobe, Mike, T-Mac, Vince, all of those guys, a lot of their movements are long. And so like those would be my five. You have to, you gotta have Isaiah, you gotta have AI, you gotta have Steph. I think Kyrie's probably the most skilled basketball player we've seen pound for pound in a lot of ways. And then Jamal, I think that's a short list, but
so
pretty
the
precise.
Reason my list was so short because it's for me, it's Kyrie and it's you. And I actually wanted to know your thoughts on who's the best between you two.
They 6-6 right now.
But that wasn't a one-on-one game.
Okay.
It was actually 5-on-5. We were 1-1 in one-on-one.
I got you.
So we played twice.
Yeah. The conversation is Kyrie's the best, but I want to see what your thoughts are.
To be 1,000% with you, I think, and we talked about this, not specifically the best between us, but he's the only other person I've seen or talked to who sees the same things what he's looking at when he's dribbling. What I mean by that is this. My feet, my hands, my mind are all one. So if you guys trapped me right now and I had a ball, I would look at a spot. And somehow, some way, I would get to that spot. It didn't matter. I would do three moves over there to make you shift and get the ball. I just know where the spot is safe at. And he's the only other person that I've ever talked to that sees it like that. Mm-hmm. Like, I think a lot of people that handle the rock see it in, like, black and white. I think we see it in color. Or they see it straight. We see it like this. You know what I mean? Like, it's a whole different way of looking at it.
Right.
But to answer your question, I'll never, in these lists, I never say myself, even with six man and stuff. I won't say I dribble better than anybody, but I won't say anybody dribbles better than me. And to his point, when these lists and these conversations come out, I'm the only one that's 6'5". Mm-hmm. And I dribble different than everybody else. Right. Even Kai, because Kai is like a rapid dribble. He's low, he's like this. He's like Barry Sanders moving.
Right.
If he was a rapper, he would be Eminem at times with how he's blah, 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 blah. I'm like Nas or Jay, because I flow over the beat. Like, I can flow. Don't reach. If you reach, I got something for you. But I don't have to pull it out until you do something else. We're both counterpunchers, but Kai's playing with that energy. He's trying to embarrass you every single time. That was when I was 17, 18. I was doing the same thing. I was throwing over my neck. I was dribbling up backwards. Right. So I dribble higher, I can dribble like I'm 5'8", but I dribble really high, and that's what makes people think they can reach and get it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I don't know if I answered your question.
No,
I'm sorry, Freddie.
You're a nerd.
Yeah.
You're a basketball nerd.
Yeah.
I'm a football nerd.
In my life, I've never been called that.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm a football
nerd. In a good
nerd,
way.
Right? I'm a football nerd. Like, the way I see it and the way I talk about it.
And you can tell,
and,
by the
like,
way.
I just really love it. Appreciate that. Like, I just really love it and, like, all those things. The only person that's ever sat with us, because our show is so, like, total people.
For sure.
The only person that's ever sat with us and talked like that is Devontae Adams.
Wow.
So we were talking to Devontae Adams about releases. And he was like, when I get up to the line of scrimmage, my Terminator mask comes down. And he's like, and I start downloading releases. And he was a hooper before he started playing football. And he was saying, if you take away this, now I'll go to the next thing. And if you move here, now I'm setting up the next thing. And listening to you talk about it was very much like that. I just thought that was super dope and wanted to say that. But you mentioned like all of these players that you loved and that you watched growing up, and you wanted people to say, okay, who do I play like? You're drafted by Cleveland after only playing, I know you didn't play 20 games, at Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And you're drafted by Cleveland, top 10, but you're sent straight to Chicago. Anybody that goes to Chicago, they only want to see one person, be around one person.
Yeah.
You actually got to do that. What was it like to be a young dude that was hooping with Mike?
Bro, so my dad, through the draft process, my dad's like, man, MJ likes your game. This before social media. Dad, you don't know Michael Jordan. What do you mean he likes my game? Why are you lying to me? Right? Like, what do you mean? And so fast forward, I get drafted to Chicago, and Tim Grover, who I knew through the draft process, like, he calls me at 6 a.m. Yo, MJ said you can meet him. Bro, I got up so fast. And I drove downtown. I was staying at Evanston. I drove downtown, and I get in the gym at Hoops, and he's in the weight room, and it's just myself, Tim Grover and Michael Jordan. And we're in the weight room, and he's in a workout, so I'm trying not to talk, like I'm just watching. And in between sets, he's coming to speak. He's like, yeah, man, I like your game, man. This summer, you know, we can work out together. And I'm like, man, this is Michael Jordan. First off, you guys seen Michael in person?
He's a big human.
He's bigger than big.
He's and a big human.
He has a glow around him that don't even look real. It don't even look real.
Yeah.
Nah, Chan, it don't look real. If he walked in here right now, look like white smokes.
He like Bruce Leroy.
No, he got that Rick James aura off Chappelle's show.
If Rick James, rest in peace, saw him, he would look at him like that. Like, he's that guy, right? And so I'm looking at him, and I'm just, like, staring at him. I can't stop staring at him. I'm like, that's Michael Jordan. And so I leave, and I call everybody I could in Seattle. But you remember, it's only 7 in the morning, so it's 5 in the morning in Seattle. Mm-hmm. So nobody's up. I go back to practice. We had shoot around that morning. And I go back and tell A.J. Guyton, and I was like, Jordan. And he's like, for real? I'm like, yeah. He's like, work out with him. Fast forward to the summer, and the first time, people hear about the story of us playing together, and we never lost. The first time, we actually played against each other. Different teams, not one-on-one. And I think our team won. And I saw how mad he was. Like, he was pissed off. And he went and sat in a corner. And he just sat there. Like, he reacted as if he had lost a game 7. I'm like, man, it's the summer. People do almost 40 years old. What are you... It's Michael Jordan. The next day, this run starts at 2:00 because I had to work out. Young players, you got to work out with your team first, and then you can go do what you want. And Grover's blowing up my phone. Yo, where you at? I'm like, bro, it's 1:00. MJ's waiting on you. Where you at? We ain't starting until you get here. I'm like, what? So we about to start early. He waited until I got there. From that moment on, we played together, and we never lost. And we played against everybody.
Wow.
Penny Hardaway, Mike Finley, Tim Hardaway, Antoine Walker. Paul Pierce, everybody came through Chicago. How UCLA is now?
Yeah.
It was like that. He was the first one I seen having refs in pickup. And then it got to a point through the summer, you got Jay-Z and Beyonce sitting courtside at a pickup run. Bro, just watch it. Like, this is Jordan. Yeah. We had everybody come through the gym. Everybody. This is how cold MJ is. I'm giving y'all, I've never said this. One dude, this got word around, you know, MJ, we all hanging out afterwards. One street dude come up there, got a bag of 100. MJ, let's gamble. MJ looked at him. He said, I ain't got a lot of time. Slip a coin for it, heads or tails. Dude looked at that 100 and said, I'm good. He thought he was going to go back and forth with him. He thought he was going to go back and forth with him. MJ ain't got time for
100
that.
100 racks?
He looked and said, let's slip a coin for it, heads or tails. Which one you call it?
Right.
Dude, look at that money. Like, you could tell he had all the hood's money. He was like, man, I can't do this. I have no flip. He looked. I'm good. Left. Man, my man was so... He would wear Jordans that probably still ain't out. Whole different color. Jordan outfit, baggy shorts. Have a matching Ferrari outside. Have a matching Lambo. Bro, he's on something totally different. Totally different.
Bro, like, you hear people outside sort of talk about it, but I've never really been with someone who was that close to, like, off the court, non-public Michael Jordan. Because there is this persona, like you always hear the Black Jesus and all these things.
Right.
And people talk about how tenacious, how competitive he was on the court. But to hear about it in real life and have the perspective of a guy that was in the league for 2 decades.
Right.
Who understands it, who's seen it all, man. I think that sets him apart. But you also started to hang with him off the court, though.
I did.
Yeah, and you talking about, I mean, you ain't flipped no coin.
I ain't flipped no coin.
But you did a little gambling.
We're gonna debunk that story right here.
Okay, because...
I was waiting to say, but this is the perfect place. Yeah, nobody's really asked me about
this. Okay, how true is the story you had to give up a Benz?
That's a true story. But it wasn't to George. It was to a street dude. Mm. So that's where it all got messed up. That it was never... And people in Chicago that was around this time will tell you the story. I used to shoot dice all the time when I was a kid, always. Different ditching class, shooting dice. That's what I did. And so I was shooting with somebody. I ain't going to say his name and all that. But I was shooting with somebody, and he started getting up. What happened was I lost the cash I had, because we were playing cash. I lost the cash I had. And then I think I'm a rookie. I probably had $5,000. I lost that. But it happened so fast in the day, because we would go play from, let's say, 2 to 5. After that, people shower, and we hanging out, 7 to whatever. And so I lost my cash I had on me, and I start betting on somebody else. So I never touched the dice again.
Okay.
So I'm basically air betting.
And I have to bet with whoever's shooting against him because I'm trying to get my 5,000 back from that particular person. Yeah. So I'm betting with the opposition. He's hitting. So when he hits him, he's hitting me too if I'm continue to bet.
Yeah.
And it got all the way up. And really what happened was the number got so high, and I'm a rookie. I'm like, I give you my car. I had two cars. I'm like, I give you my car. I'd rather give you my car than go to the bank and get 100,000, right? So he's like, all right. And that's how I lost the car and the bet, but it wasn't to Jordan. But people put those two together. I was saving this for TNT, but y'all family now. Y'all got the story.
So even with that, you know, you said Mike said he loved your game.
Yes.
But it has to be something more. I'm sure he loved a lot of players' games. What do you think it was about you that, you know, allowed him to gravitate in your direction and take you in?
To what RC said, I think. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, you guys know as well. Magic was a tall guard, but he had a totally different handle. At the time, you had Kobe, you had T-Mac, you had Vince, but I had a different handle than them as well, right? So I think somebody at that size that can handle the ball like a point guard, I think for him was really dope to see, because in a way, it was like he saw the evolution of where things were kind of going. You know what I mean? Like where the game was going. And taking it a step even further than that, I'll never forget my agent, shout out Aaron Goodwin. He texts me, he's like, yo, MJ wants you in this commercial with him. I'm like, all right, what commercial? He's like, the Skaterade commercial. I'm like, well, what am I doing? He's like, you just playing him one-on-one. I'm like, all right. So I go to United Center. Those are Jordan 1s?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's Jordan 1s. They have me wearing the commercial. It's at the United Center. I walk in there and we're basically on the court, and I remember the director's name is Joe. It starts with a P. You guys can look it up. He directed Space Jam. I didn't know this at the time, but I went back and looked. And he's like, man, dunk. And MJ's like, man, JC don't do all that dunking. That is game. Get somebody else in here to dunk. And they had the guy Kevin Daly, I believe, was the Globetrotter. So he's the one in the commercial doing the dunking. But I'm in maybe one of the best Jordan commercials ever, where he's playing one-on-one against himself. I never knew it was going to be this.
Right.
I'm like, MJ, what's the lines? He's like, just say what you want. I'm like, am I trying to play like you? Am I playing? He's just play. You overthink. Just play. So I start reaching, you reach, I teach. And we're just rolling.
Yeah.
We're just rolling. And if you slow certain parts down, I have certain pictures of it. You can see my little skinny arm, my little peanut head, but it's his face on my body. So for him to, I like your game, but dude, I want you to play the younger me. Man, I'm done. That's the greatest ever telling me he want me to be him in a commercial. Bro, think about that.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Right.
I was dreaming to meet him one day. Like, that's something beyond. That's a blessing.
I gotta ask, bro, would you be what you are? Would you be sixth man of the year multiple times without MJ?
No.
On or off the field?
No, because, and you guys know, when you're a young player and an all pro, right? It's like, man, Freddie T, man, you nice.
Right.
It gives you a different gas, right? It gives you a different fuel. But when the GOAT, somebody I could tell you everything about, from his sister's name to his dad's name, his mom's name, his shoe size, his favorite Gator. I used to wear rip-off Jordans. They used to call me Baby Jordan when I was 8 because I love this man so much. There's a picture on my IG where I'm wearing 23 with a totally different color wristband on my arm because MJ did it.
Right.
So for the greatest I've ever seen, you can make an argument Jordan's better at his job than anybody's ever been at theirs. Yep. In any sport or anything. So this dude is saying, I got game, and he actually likes my game, and he's waiting on me at the gym and wants me to play the younger him and come to my house and hang out and be around my family and shoot. Like, bro, it changed my whole life because I could weather any storm of bad happening, especially on the basketball court. Like, nah, the GOAT said, you good. And I felt my game going. I truly felt my game going like this. Like, it was like a rocket. And I'm playing against the Tim Hardaways. Game-winning points, he's coming to me. You know the pressure that is? Like, Jordan's coming to you for a game winner.
Yeah.
It changed my whole life.
I got one more Jordan question for you. What was the most special moment? Was it initially meeting Mike,
mm-hmm.
or that last game, his last game when he was with the Wizards versus Chicago? And how was that moment for you?
Yeah, I'm gonna give you two. And one of them has never been talked about. One was when he found my doctor to do my surgery when I tore my ACL. In Alabama. He called me the night before surgery. You all right? Just checking on you, making sure you're all right. And it's Michael Jordan calling me, like, to make sure. And he set up the surgeon. The Bulls actually, you know, organized it. But he told me where to go.
Okay.
And who to go to. And James Andrews in Alabama.
Well, we all know him.
The GOAT. The GOAT.
He the GOAT.
And he was with him when he was down there with the Barons. Yeah. And so he told me to go there. So to see him take that kind of interest in me the night before my first surgery ever in life, like, that was a special moment I'll never forget. And then when we played him when he was with the Wizards, like you said, his first time back in Chicago, mm-hmm. and to see the ovation, the love that they gave him, I think it was like a 9-minute ovation. And to see what he meant to so many, he had to tell him to stop, let's play, because it was just crazy. I have the first Jordans he ever wore against the Bulls and the last ones he ever, he signed them and gave me. So I have both pair.
Man, that's dope.
In that game, yeah.
A lot of people can say they have mentors and people that took a liking to them. Not everybody can say that the GOAT did that. But we do learn from those experiences.
For sure.
And you talked about having an opportunity to coach your son in the same league or the same AAU program you grew up in. You recently posted about parenting. You're dual now, right?
Yes.
You're the parent of a player, mm-hmm. and you're also the coach of a player. How have you handled that and been able to navigate those players, those parental relationships, and just be a father to your son while you're out there?
It was so this is year three coaching him, and it was so hard the first year and a half because I was treating him like my son rather than just a player. And I was harder on him than anybody else. And I didn't want to be the parent, oh, he's daddy balling. You know, we get that all the time. He's daddy balling. He's doing this because of son. So I went the other way. I'm like, you'll never be able to say that. I'm going to be hard on him. He's going to be the first one to come out. He's going to be the only one I yell at. He's going to be the one that, what I'm really thinking about all y'all at times, he's going to get it because he's my son. I know he can handle it. But then a couple of my friends, shout out to Dave King and Good, they were like, you're actually not coaching him, you're yelling at him. And I had to check myself. I'm like, you're right, why am I doing that? Because they're saying that they're gonna say what they want anyway, as we all know. So as long as I know I'm doing right by all these kids, then I'm at peace, so I can move forward. So now I'm actually coaching him. Mm-hmm. And it's been a better experience for him, I'm sure, and me as well, my JJ. And if my mom or dad was like, you're gonna be coached by this college guy. Take out pro. You're gonna be coached by a D1 college guy. They wouldn't say a word because that's what I aspire to be.
Yep.
He has the answers. The best part of actually being on that team is the cheat code of the knowledge that he has, if this is what I wanna do. So we have three D1 college coaches. Shout out to Keith Smith, he played at Oregon, played at Pepperdine. Shout out to Rail Hennings. His dad actually runs the program, both D1 guards. Keith could have been in the NBA, but he got hurt. He's actually Paolo's favorite player to come from Seattle.
Really?
That's how good Keith was. In real D1, he's smaller, point guard, cold. But we are the only staff in basketball, in AAU basketball, have three guys that play D1.
Wow.
And so for me, as a parent, one thing I can honestly say when I was just a parent is I trusted who was coaching my son. You could send the whole half. I don't have a problem with it because I trust you, right? There could be a bigger picture. You could see something totally different. And the parents have kind of ruin the sport because now kids hating on another kid based off what the parents say on the car right there.
Yep.
A kid's, you know, why am I not getting this attention? Why am I not? All that because with the parents, it starts at the home. And so now the parents are kind of messing up that dynamic. So now when we recruit kids, or I don't really recruit, when we choose to take a kid, we're choosing if that parent's going to fit in with what we see, because we're teaching them, we're coaching them not where they are, but where they'll be and what we know is best for them. So you have to be able to fit in with that. And AAU, I think, is different. We're doing it totally different. But shout out to the Rotary program. They've always done it that way.
Man, that's dope.
Yeah.
Well, I got to ask you, like, you heard the player that I love that get out the way.
Yeah, that's you.
Give me the ball.
You straight to the street.
And street game, yeah. Like you, and yeah. One. Yes. Like, hey, yes. We good, 8 seconds left. Here. And I see you sit there and clap.
Line
like, give
up.
Me the ball. I'm about to dop him.
Dop?
I call it dop.
What playground was that for?
It's called, I've never really played basketball.
That's what I was getting at.
That's
what I thought.
Yeah, the other day he was trying.
I'm a dop him.
The other day he was trying to take pictures. He was modeling. He modeled now too.
Oh, yeah.
I just want to let you know, he modeled now. Hey. He does comedy. Hey. So he got
you see these teeth, don't you?
Hey. Yeah, I see what you on. I see what you on.
He got some new hooping shoes. He had the basketball shorts on. His whole thigh was out.
Right. And he had an N1 ball.
He was holding the basketball like this.
He a true model.
Then now he's shooting it, taking a picture, his elbow way out here.
Oh,
the whole thing was bad.
CRC.
So that's where the dot.
Okay.
That's where the dot came from.
Thank you for the backstory, RC.
Like you say, AI yourself, Lou, Joe. I want to do this and get out the way. D-Wade, when he was young, just,
Flash.
Listen, why did that not translate to All-Star for you? Because you could embarrass anybody if they line up in front of you, but you ain't make an All-Star.
Because especially at the time when I was coming out, first off, you were just positions. Like, it wasn't positionless basketball. You were a point guard, you were a shooting guard, you were a small forward, and I'm cool with that. So the game was in a different place. And then winning was everything. And that part I understood. Like, we're going to reward winning. So anybody tells you about me would say he's loyal. So I was never the dude like, oh, we're struggling, I'm about to leave. Like, this is what it is, let's try to change it, let's get, you know, let's get better, whatever it is. And so for me, times in my career where I could have made it, like I remember the year with the Knicks, I averaged almost 21-5. I was one of only three people who didn't. But now, if a guy's in at that time, 21 was probably worth 28 now, yeah, right, with the, how the stats are. But at that time, they were like, you're not winning enough. I'm like, all right, well, you know, I'm not gonna be All-Star. The two other times I thought I could have been an All-Star was with the Clippers. Well, with the Hawks first. I was a second leading scorer. We're third in the whole division. And Joe Johnson and Al Horford made it. But me and Josh Smith had a case. I'm top five in fourth quarter scoring. But the coaches, and this needs to change. I'm glad you brought that up. The coaches were saying, well, he's coming off the bench. So I'm like, I could have just physically started the game and had the same stats and y'all would have put me as an All-Star. You're doubling me on every pick and roll. I'm the only person off the bench getting double teamed every time I come in the game. But you won't reward me. But you want me to sacrifice and say, oh, I'm a team player, I'll come off the bench, but you want to penalize me for it by not being an All-Star. So that's what happened with the Hawks first, and then it happened with the Clippers. Clippers, we were fighting for first in the whole league when they picked, and that same thing happened.
And that sixth man thing, why couldn't you be the fifth man? Because I'm in Miami, so Tyler Hero, 1-6. So
for sure.
We argue all the time. He just came back off an injury and all. So
he's
like,
just as important as a top five guy.
And he went crazy.
Right.
Last week, I think he went crazy. But what's the difference between the sixth man and the fourth man?
For me, like I said, I started getting put in the box. Oh, he's good, but he's on bad teams. Oh, you're a loser. I've never been a loser. From a kid to when I played in Michigan those games to high school, like I've always won. And I got to a point like, you know, I'm so nice, it don't even matter. Do what you want. I'm gonna still have the same effect. So bring me off the bench. All I wanna do is win.
Yeah.
So as fate would have it, I got traded here. They got Joe, they got Bibby, they got Josh and all those guys. They just went to the playoffs. I'll be the sixth man. Average 18 points, win 53 games. And that's what changed my career. But what's even more powerful than that is I didn't know that that would take on a life of its own. Like I wasn't trying to be one of the best six men ever. I just wanted to win. I was tired of being like, oh, he's good, but he's on bad teams. I'm like, I can play the drums, I can play piano, I can sing too, whatever. And I took pride in that more so than, you know, I had to be a starter. And so now when I go around gyms around the country, I'm coaching and kids are like, I want to be a six man. Like that's the best feeling ever because that wasn't why I did it.
The other thing is too, it's, you know, you go back to Vinnie Johnson.
Microwave, yeah.
That was the first six man I could remember that had a green light.
Yes.
That would come in the game on a good team. And when he came in the game, you could see the difference in how he was approached defensively, but also the way he attacked the game. Like, you did that because hooping is hooping.
It's hooping.
Right? Like, you're a real hooper. Like, when I watch you play, it's like, yeah, he's been playing basketball his whole life. When you said it was a part of you, you could see that. But, like, the thing I love listening to is just how you give game. And Austin Rivers, I remember him having a moment where he mentioned that you were the best teammate he'd ever had. What about you, man, has made you... Like you said, I could drum, I could sing, I could play the guitar. I'm willing to do that, and I want to win. What about you gave you that feeling that, hey, man, it's as much about the team and other people as it is about me when basketball does feel like an individual sport sometimes?
My character, like how I live my life. I have my foundation, and people would tell you, oh, Maul did this or did that. Out of every 100 things I do as far as giving away from the court, you'll hear about one of them. And that's how I want it. Because I don't want it to be like, oh, I gave because the camera's here. Now, some things you got to do publicly and hopefully inspire somebody else to do the same. But that's how I live my life. Like, my character is to give. I'm naturally a giver. Like, that's just who I am. I try to see the good in everybody. And I have a phrase and motto, like, if you can help someone, do it. Mm-hmm. Like, it ain't about, I got this, you ain't got that. Like, nah, if I got knowledge, I'm going to give it to you. Like, if I have extra money... My sister said something that was wise, my sister Lori, a long time ago. She was like, you become a bigger version of what you already were once you reach a certain level, right? If you become famous, if you were a giver, you're gonna give more. If you was an asshole, you're gonna be a bigger asshole because now you can, look what I got, you ain't got that.
Right.
And so I find myself, even when I was a kid, I didn't have much. I had $20, somebody on the street, you know, I may buy a pizza for $5, I give them $15. I know where my next money is coming from. That's just my heart, like that's just who I am. And I've always lived like that. So. I think that translated on the court as well. And it didn't always seem like it because I was ISOing, but I really did. And so when I won Teammate of the Year, That, to me, was better than any sixth man I ever won. Because that's not something you're trying to win.
Right.
That's just like your character for, I want the best for him, for that dude. And then I want the best for him and that dude. I ain't worried about me. I'm going to be all right. But I want the best for them and genuinely mean it. And so when you do that, that speaks to your character. And that's just how you was raised.
But you articulated so well. But that has to come with some regret. Because if you were selfish, you could have been the top dog on teams for years. What you play, 21? You could have been selfish and been the top dog starting, doing your thing. But you were trying to facilitate and all that stuff. Man, that don't get paid.
You know, it don't. But you know what meant more to me? To I remember when I was a kid, I'm like, man, I'll pay the NBA to play in the NBA. I don't even want the money. I'm not one of them dudes who played to change my circumstances. I didn't change my mom's. That's not why I was playing.
Wow.
I did not play for that. I played for the pure love of the sport and how I felt when I... Bro, if you give me a ball right now, if something takes over my body. It's almost like a magic happens. And I played for that. And I want to do that against the highest level. So for me, it wasn't like I need to be a top. I never had an ego. I took more pride. If I was a rapper, I'd be Drake 3000. I took more pride in my peers saying, you know, he's nice, than being on every commercial. I turned down commercials and stuff. It's funny now I'm doing commercials in TV because that wasn't even the point. Like I didn't do nothing really as a player. Yeah. I didn't even talk as a player. I did my job. I went home. I watched the game. I studied the game. I remember my wife was like, NBA TV is the worst thing to happen. You got 8 different games going at once. So for me, I never played to change circumstances. I played for the pure love of the sport. And I was good enough being Drake 3000. We'll never mention him as a GOAT, but all his peers were like, do not get on the track with him. Dude is different.
We've seen it.
He can go do a solo album. He's good being in the group. I like being my boys. I'm cool. I don't need the spotlight.
Yeah.
My game's loud. I didn't even talk on the court.
Listening to that, like you just talked about what a basketball does to you. You say it's like a magic happens. Was that why it was so hard for you when you didn't get a call? When they said, hey, you can come coach, you can, you know, be a part of the organization, but we are no longer looking at Jamal Crawford as the hooper. Was that why some of the depression started?
For sure. Absolutely. There was days I couldn't watch basketball. Because I'm seeing the game from so many, like you said, I'm a basketball nerd. I'm keeping that, by the way. But it was so many different elements I could see the game from, and I'm watching out there, I'm watching the pace, I'm watching space, I'm watching how he's getting that shot, I'm watching, oh, why he missed that shot. I don't even know the person. I'm in their mind, I could see it. And the fact I couldn't influence it in a way of actually playing, it killed me. Because here I am, right? I go to Phoenix my last year. And in Phoenix, we're supposed to be going for the playoffs. Myself, Trevor Ariza, Tyson Chandler, Ryan Anderson. There's some vets around, Booker and those guys. Mm-hmm. Within a month, 3 of them dudes is gone. So now we're rebuilding all of a sudden. So now we don't really need you to play, we need you to mentor. So I took all the young guys after every game. I'm not playing, I know I should be playing, but it's not about me. I'm not playing, let's go work. You gotta work, we gotta work. So I'm working with you. So we working, I'm getting team managers, I'm getting everybody, I'm playing on the road. And I took value in that, right? I'm away from my family for the first time because I signed a day before the season. And so they stayed home, kids already in school. And so the last month, James Jones, we had DeAndre Ayton's house, I'll never forget it. And he's like, man, everybody's about to shut down. You still want to hoop? I'm like, do I? Let's go. I averaged the most I ever have in a month in my career. I averaged 31 points, 6 assists off the bench. So people see the 51-point game, go back and look at the other 3. And we won half the games, by the way, and we only had like 17 or 19 wins that whole year. And I know it's the end of the season, but for me, man, I'm a kid in the candy store. 31-6 off the bench, and I got 51 off the bench as well at 39 years old. So it wasn't about my game. It wasn't about my character. I just won teammate of the year. So that's where the depression came in at, because how could I not get a call? Just like Isaiah Thomas right now, I'm so happy for him. He woke up to have to wake up every single day and not know, but still have to be ready when the opportunity comes. Man, it was everything for me to step away from the game. And then when Kobe passed and the bubble happened and all that, that's when I got back into it.
Do you think Zeke and Mike will ever be able to shake hands?
I wish they did. Because those are my 3 favorite players in the world in life are Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, and Isaiah Thomas. I wore 11 because of Zeke. Zeke signed me to the Knicks. That's the one that made me want to dribble the rock like I do. And Michael's everything to me. He's just my overall favorite. And having that relationship as well. So that's one thing I wish could happen is those 2. They ain't gotta be the best of friends.
But shake hands because you two meant so, and I know there's great respect on both sides, and I know what they meant to the game. Like, you guys influenced a kid all the way across country in Seattle, and I'm sure you influenced kids all over the world. You know what I mean? So I would hope they at least shake hands as men and say, you know what, as black men especially, you know how powerful it was to see Magic and Isaiah sit down? Like, those are two of my favorite players ever. So to see those two sit down and have that talk, like, that's big for our community.
Bro, for you to say, like RC said, you ain't get that call. It had to be something. Like, I'll be honest, when I was playing ball, I'm knock-kneed. I got Kenny Smith knees.
Kenny getting strays in here.
Once I got a little old, dude,
use a lie. Kenny knees are special.
Hey, that's my teammate. Y'all go. We can talk about how I feel about teammates. Hey, don't do that.
Hey, Kenny, come on. We can talk about
it. They trying to get you on here, Jet. That's all that is.
But yeah, so I knew when I moved, like, I still felt as if 3-4 years after I played, I could still stop the run. Right. I could run down and hit somebody in the gap. Like, I could make a tackle, but the coverage wasn't there.
Right.
When you say you didn't get a call, can you, sitting here now, like, do you know why you didn't get called? Because you just said, you can go out there and drop 30 whenever you wanted to. It's a reason why there are 30 teams that didn't give you a call.
And of those 30, 7 of them tried to hire me. Right, so they respected my character and basketball knowledge as well. It took me forever to get to this point, but I finally think I got it figured out. What happened was, I've been playing for a long time. I have a following. They don't want that to be a distraction. Because they're trying to, you know, have this young guy who's 19 or 20 start his career, and I could get in the way of that. Yeah, I have no problem being the vet. I have no problem. But the crowd, we want, that's a distraction. Mm. And so it took me forever to get to that point because I didn't understand that. I'm calling teams like, yo, are you hearing? What's going on? Am I blacklisted? Like, what's up? I've never heard nothing. Matter of fact, we want to hire you. What's going on? What you doing? And so it took me forever to get to that. And I think the same thing worked against Isaiah. He has such a following, I think. And you see, he was in San Antonio and they're cheering for him to get in the game. Right, so I think it became a distraction. Organizations, they want the young guys, it's their time. And I get that, I'm respectful of it. But I think that would have gotten in the way of that. And you have influence now as well, right, in the locker room. Because they may want to get a message across that may not be straight. And now I got to be the one like, nah, that ain't straight, dog. They ain't. And they know I'm respected, right? So it's like, nah, I think those two things worked against me.
Cam Newton said something very similar at the end of his career that he could still play. But he said, if you have a quarterback who's a young guy and you want him to start his career, you can't have a Cam Newton in the locker room or in the building, because if that guy does struggle a little bit, we know that Cam Newton can do something. We know that Jamal Crawford can come off of the bench and get buckets. And also, it's fun to watch, right? People want to be entertained.
Yes.
They want to have a good time. And when you have people that can do that, who are sort of waiting in the wings, it doesn't matter how good of a teammate you are.
Right.
There is a pressure that's put on a team when somebody like you is in the building, no matter if you're 40 or if you're 25. When you see guys give you the respect that you've been given, I think it's not just about the way you played. I do think it's about the way you give back. So recently, Wimby pulled out the sham guy. I saw you teaching him. Is it the move you taught him? Do you feel a little pride in it? Like, see, I told you he could do it. But in giving back that way, man, having that respect, and then seeing young dudes go out and do it, you know, what sort of pride do you feel in still being one of the best teammates in the world?
It's unbelievable because look at Wimby, right? Wimby is going to be the face of the game, of the whole game, for the next 15, 20 years. And he's telling me he can do my moves. And we connected at All-Star, and I'm sure we'll connect in the future, and we talk. And so I'm sure we'll connect. But it's just, it's crazy to see that part, right? Steph at the All-Star game. Steph does my double behind the back when I'm there and I'm covering the game on the sideline. I turn to him, I'm like, y'all see that? Like, that's Steph Curry doing that. So it's crazy to see the influence. That's a move I made up when I was 16 on accident. Now Steph's doing it for the whole world on the All-Star stage. Like, it's just, bro, it's a blessing. Kyrie telling me he would be at a pro-am at 11 years old and he would watch me.
Yeah.
And the stuff I was doing. He'd go on the court and be the kid dribbling in between timeouts. Like, so to see the influence and, like, that right there means more than All-Stars, because that lives forever. Because there's going to be a kid that sees Steph do that double behind the back or Wimby do the move and be like, man, Wimby did this move, not knowing I had any lineage to it, but they're going to see it and it's going to inspire them to do something else. And that's how you live forever.
Let's switch things up real quick. Quick pivot. Talking about influence. You mentioned Andre 3000, right?
Y'all know him, I want to meet him. That's the one person in the world I want to meet. I'm just telling y'all.
We saw him at the fight, and he had that same aura, that glow that you mentioned about MJ when he walked in the room. Like, that's 3K. Like, 3K. He's the GOAT. But you also talked about influence, Jay-Z and Eminem. You said Jay had a huge influence on the rap game, probably bigger than M. 50 Cent, obviously, he jumped into it. It was like rolling eye emoji or something. Cough, cough. The state of the rap game right now, with your love for music, where do you think hip-hop is going?
I think it's fresh in what they're doing. I think it's unique, and I'm sure people from the previous generations looked at 90s rap or 2000s rap like, you know, this ain't really for me. I always find myself going to, like, the 90s, because I always go back to my childhood, my soundtrack. I play Biggie all the time, I play Nas, I play Jay, I play Pop. I think there are some ones out there that's just cold, like, Kendrick, is to me, he's cut from the 3,000 cloth. He's not in it for the hype. He's into his craft. He's as good as anybody when it comes on to just rapping, right? Then you have guys I like 21 Savage. I find myself liking him because he's just catchy, like the way he delivers stuff. So I think you're going with that Kendrick J. Cole thing.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, is the rap big three dead? Not the NBA or Cube's big three, but the rap big three.
I don't think it's dead. But I think it's in a different way. I don't think there's no real malice. Like, when Biggie and Pac got into their thing, there was something real there. Or at least Pac felt like it was something real there. Big was like, nah. But there was something real there. Mm-hmm. With this one, Cole and Kendrick are really like boys. And I think that's why you see Cole do that apology. Mm-hmm. It really bothered him that he had to say something bad. Think about the beefs Cole's had. We haven't even really known about him because he may say a slick line. And that's the people that actually said or had something with him. This is boy. Yeah. So that's why the evolved person in me is like, I respect that. Yeah, it's not really great for the actual hip-hop culture, but Cole is that dude. Like, Cole's in his own world. He always has been. That's who he is.
Yep.
That's who he's been, and he's consistent with that. So that part of it, obviously, and Drake's a monster, right? Drake's like the LeBron of right now. He's a monster with how his finger's on the pulse.
In 2016, you did the Players Tribune, and you talked about, I think it was like the great shot creators.
Yeah.
It was Kobe, Kyrie. You said Kareem had the ultimate
Dirt
way to create a shot with the sky hook. Yeah, Dirt, you had Steph. And you talked about the different ways all of those guys were able to create shots, whether it was footwork, dribbling, whatever it was, right? For you now, let's take away those guys off the list.
Okay.
Who would you add to the list in this game? You know, because now you have guys like Luka, who is different from what we've ever seen. In a game full of athleticism, he has zero seams sometimes, but he can create a shot anywhere. So if you're talking about your top guys creating shots in ball right now,
that big boy
who would
in Denver.
Be?
Joker.
Man, he's the slow motion game, but he can go drop whatever he wants to drop.
Let's use Luka, since you said him. Luka, you know how we always say pace? Like, oh, he plays with a great pace. The thing that's special about Luka isn't just his pace. It's that his pace can make you go his pace. He can slow the whole game down. And that's why he sees it in slow motion. I bet him and Joker be having a conversation, man, these dudes, we just running circles around these dudes. They think they got to, I bet you they have in private conversation, like, man, these dudes, we just running. They're so far ahead mentally.
Yeah.
Luke has been a pro since he was 15, 16. Yeah. So he's mastered the game at like 20. So by the time he got here, there's nothing you can do to affect me. You can pressure, you can, it's almost like Floyd when he's boxing. Will people say pressure him? Once he collects data.
Seen it all.
I can adjust to it all like that. You can't bother Luka. And Luka's smart enough to know I need my teammates as well, and that's why his scoring is easier. He has 73 points, but he had 14 assists. Yeah. If he just had 50, he probably had 3 or 4 assists because he's just trying to shoot every time. But he puts you in a bag where you can't figure him out because he's doing both. So now he's testing not only you, he's testing your trust with your teammate. You're supposed to be there, man. That's the cover. Well, man, he did that. Like, that's what Luka does. Luka's playing a whole different game. Joker's like that, but Joker's working backwards. Joker's not playing against you, he's playing against your coach. And that's what's different about him. I'm not worried about none of you dudes. Coach, what are you gonna do so I can counter that? Oh, you did that, I got this. And he doesn't, for as dominant as he is, he doesn't even want to score. To beat Denver, you probably have to make Joker try to get 60. That won't beat you, right? But he's like, no, I'll get 30, I'll get 15, I'll get 18. You don't know where it's coming from.
Right.
I'm gonna make you look dumb. I'm gonna throw a cross court looking at you in the eyes. I'm gonna pass to him on the money right there. So now he's not gonna help. So now I got more space to do this. He doesn't even want to score. He's working backwards. He's one of the only dominant players I've seen that can average almost 30 points and doesn't care about scoring.
He won't play with his horses. you don't care about, like, you know what I mean? Like, he was like, no parade.
Frenchie and Rudy, and he wants to play with his horses. Yeah, he ain't worried about this.
He's like, man, I love parade.
Like, bro, I want to go home.
Yeah.
I want to go home with my horses.
You talked about, like, some of the foreign guys, and I believe whoever it is over USA Basketball. No, Adam Silver actually was talking about the development of the American game, the American player. When you think of those, so you have to go, obviously you got the Brown, Tatum duo, Ant-Man is amazing. Ja has been hurt this year. You know, you still have LeBron. Now the Lakers are playing well. When you think about this playoff push, obviously Jokic and the Denver Nuggets are the team people are aiming for. Who are some of those teams or some of those players that you think can have a big effect on who wins the ring this year?
It sounds crazy because they'd be like this. I still think Phoenix is going to be a tough out because when the game slows down, they have three dudes who can score like that. They always have a shot, but it's the way they score. I don't want them coming down going ISO every single time. I want them off of movement first, make the defense shift, but get everybody touch it, they're into it, into the game, and then you show me your one-on-one game. Because if you're showing one-on-one in the first quarter every time, and goes back to what you said, being a basketball nerd, my fourth quarter moves I'm doing in the first quarter, so they're not going to be effective in the fourth quarter. Because I've shown you my good stuff, because I'm trying to get a bucket. Let the offense work for you. If they do that, I think Phoenix can be really, really dangerous in the playoffs, in the postseason.
And is Boston on the other side?
It's Boston on the other side. But what scares me about Boston is trust. They blow they're like Mike Tyson. They're knocking everybody out. But when it gets late, and now you have to make a decision, and now you have to trust your teammate, I can't pull out my one-on-one kit. That's the only thing that can get in Boston's way. Can you keep that same trust when adversity hits? Can you keep that same trust when it's a tight game? Not when you up 15 and everybody touching the rock. Can you do that when it's tight?
Can you watch the game? Because the game changes, the half-court game in the playoffs. That's what happens. I talk about like I said, I'm a Heat fan.
Yeah.
I'm down there. The Heat lost the first playing game, won the second one last year, and then they went to the finals.
Right.
Can you watch a team and say, that's a regular season team, that's a playoff team?
Absolutely. The Heat are a playoff team. As you see, when they start revving up, you can see when they start hitting that switch, like, all right, now we got to grind. Because you got to think the back channel of that, the way they practice, the way they prepare every single day, right? Like, they're building their habits, but they're maxing their bodies out as well. But now this is where you start ramping it up. Like, okay, now we really got to go. And so the Heat, that Heat culture is tough to beat. And for your Heat, I think Scary Terry and Tyler Hero, when the game slows down, he's going to be a difference maker.
Yeah.
And he's going to be a difference maker, Terry, because he can play with the starters or play with the bench. And that's a whole different thing. Because you could be the guy with guys that can't score. Can you still play well off of these main dudes, off of Jimmy, off of Bam? If you can do that, now you got to master, you play off both groups.
We got action.
Jay, you had many pivots in your life on the court. Mm-hmm. What's been your biggest pivot in life? You know, that one moment that without that moment, we wouldn't have Jamal Crawford.
I would say it absolutely has to be getting serious about school. Because I was always smart enough to get the work done. I won awards as a kid, like in math and different subjects. But that changed my life because I could have just been a dude in the playground. Literally. I literally could have just been a guy on the playground like, man, he got game, why he ain't playing? So when I got my grades together and focused in on school and knew I had to have my education tight, that changed my whole life. And when I came back to Seattle at 16, that was my mixtape circuit. Like, I was hitting every part. Where the best player is at? I'm back. I want to show him back. I left at 5'9", now I'm 6'4", coming back. Right? So dribbling the same way. So it went from that to I started working out with Doug Christie and Gary Payton, and they took an interest in me. And then they were like, you can make it. You can do this. And I had a pro telling me that. And so when that happened, I'm like, my grades is all I see. SAT score. When I got my SAT score, my sister then came home screaming like Ricky and Boys in the Hood when he got his score. I promise you. You made it. You got 1,000. You did it. I'm like, what? You did it. And that changed my whole life because I'm like, my talent's going to take me. Now my grades is tight. I'm ready to go.
You back at the crib living, you know, across from like Seattle Seahawks owners and all kind of stuff that rich people do.
Come on, man.
You see that house?
Come on, man. I bought it in the recession. Don't do me like that.
And you go, you know, but you drive up to, what is it, Liberty Park?
Yeah.
And to know that you had, like, I've done so much that this park is part of my legacy. You know, you can bring your son out there. You can bring JJ out there and he can see, man, Pops was really like that.
Right.
What sort of feeling, you know, is that to be that ingratiated into the hoops culture of the place where you're from?
It's so crazy. Most of the time I go to Liberty Park, they don't even know I'm there. And I just drive by and I'll just park.
and I just watch kids. And I'm like, man, they get a chance to experience, not me, but they get a chance to experience. They take pride in being at that park because it's named after me. They take pride in, like, if there's, like, when Nipsey passed away and they're having memorials all over the country, they chose that park to do his in Seattle. So, like, I take great pride in that part of it. Like, that's the legacy. That's forever. For me, I'm playing the forever game, to be honest with you. And the only way you could do that is if you give. I think that's why you get love, because you give it, like, genuinely, purely, with no agenda. Like, I'm not giving you love so I can be on your show. I'm not giving you, like, I rock with you, or if I don't, I don't wish nothing bad. I'm just going to stay over here. Like, that's, yeah. I live my life like that. I don't wish bad on nobody. I want everybody to be successful, but I also want to give. I think it's my duty. I think God blessed me because he knew I bless others. Like, truly. And not just, like, monetarily, but, like, giving hope. Especially these kids, man, I give hope. And somebody gave it to me, and it changed my life, so I know what it means.
You know, speaking of hope, you talk about Hoopers come out of Washington. Obviously, Nate is one of them. And I know right now he's struggling. Anything you want to say or just put out, because I know he, what is it, his liver?
Kidney.
Mm-hmm. You know, so just anything you want to say about that.
Yeah, just to Nate, like, Nate's inspiration. Nate, he's an inspiration on the court, but who he is as a person. The same person you see at 7 at night, he is at 7 in the morning. He was basketball state player of the year, football state player of the year, on the track record until recently as well. But he's just like a fighter. Like, he's a fighter at his core. He's never going to give up. He's one of the most inspirational people I've ever met. And so for me, we have to give him a kidney. Like, it's no maybe, we have to give him a kidney. Because we need him around. Because I see what he does when he pours into the youth. Pours into our community with no cameras around. Like, he's one of the ones we look at like, man, you know, if Nate can do it, we can do it. He gives that. And so for us, he has to be around. He deserves it. He genuinely deserves it because he's helped too many people. He's done too much good in the world. So we got to get him.
Well, man, we've been trying to get this done for a long time, bro. I was excited. I told my producer when we got here, I was like, I'm telling you, it's going to be a great show. I'm like, he's dope. And, man, you delivered. It's one of the best shows to me I think we've done, man, so I appreciate you.
Man, like, seriously, you guys, and it goes back to teammate, you could do your own thing, you could do your own thing, you could do your own thing, but y'all, the power of y'all together is changing our culture. We as a culture are looking to y'all to take the lead as you're doing, and you're doing it with class, you're doing it, like, authenticity, with everything that matters to our culture. On the playgrounds too. They love the pivot. That's what we do.
Appreciate you, dog. That was gangster, man. Appreciate
you. Yes, sir.
Appreciate
it,
man. Yes, sir.
That was real,
dog.
Respect.
Man,
that's
come
real,
on, man.
For sure,
Frank T. Hold up. Limitless. Take a stomach, cap, pin in it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, got me up. On the mission, got me up. Knowing me, I got the key. On the vision, I can trust. Trust. Limitless. Niggas send me capping in it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, got me up.